Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Rice from Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. First on the docket, I'm going to give a shout out to both of my kids. Second, Lori Vallow. Is the LDS Church now involved in her case? And what is Lori Vallow's lawyer missing? Next, a senseless killing in North Carolina. The United States attorney to Ghislaine Maxwell. It's for your safety. Get over it. New George Floyd video from more body cams has been released. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day and our contestants for the week. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Rice from Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. Now, first on the docket, I don't talk about my kids very much other than I'm really proud of them. Well, my daughter graduated from Vanderbilt University last week in their graduate school of nursing, and she is now a nurse practitioner. Super proud of her. And for those of you may have already heard before, my son is a pilot in the United States Air Force, and his first assignment was what they call a first assignment instructor pilot, also known as a FAPE. Well, he got his drop date today, and he is going off to fly F-16s. So to both of my kids, congratulations. You've worked hard. You've earned it. Straight to the docket, the Lori Vallow case. Is the LDS Church getting involved? And if so, what is Lori Vallow's attorney missing? That's right. The attorney for Lori Vallow, Daybell, says a letter sent from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints presidency, the first presidency, to local leaders last week is alarming and concerning. Now, Mr. Means issued a five-page response after church leaders, specifically Russell Nelson, Dallin Oaks, and Henry Ehring, released a letter with the subject, quote, involvement in legal proceedings. And in their document, it states, we remind leaders and members of the longstanding policy that church leaders should not involve themselves in civil or criminal cases regarding members in their units, quorums, or organizations without first consulting with church council. The letter goes on to say, however well-intentioned, church leaders sharing information in legal proceedings can sometimes be misinterpreted and even damaging. The First Presidency says if local leaders believe they should testify or communicate in legal matters, they should first contact church attorneys in Salt Lake City. Now, Mr. Means says by issuing this correspondence on the second day of the preliminary hearing, the LDS Church has told approximately 26% of the residents in the state of Idaho to contact church legal counsel to enter into a code of silence and to only discuss their potential knowledge of this case and any other civil or criminal case after filtering said knowledge through the lens that is the LDS Church. Mr. Means went on and said, these LDS residents make up possible jury pool members, witnesses, judges, prosecutors, police officers, detectives, deputies, police, chief captains, and other elected and non-elected officials throughout the state of Idaho. Mr. Means then goes on and says that it is disturbing and at worst criminal that somebody would go against the doctrine that a Latter-day Saint should strictly obey the law of God, including the constitutional laws of the land in which he lives. Mr. Means goes on and states that the LDS Church has tainted the court's ability to full disclosure by LDS witnesses, evidence procurement, jury pool, and the like, Means writes. Now, this presents a very interesting issue. Now, clearly, the LDS Church doesn't want its members getting involved in legal matters because it could bring a negative light to the church. Completely understand that. However, I don't think that Mr. Means is really grasping what has taken place. One could certainly say that the church is directing people to not get involved in this particular case, which frankly could potentially inhibit people from testifying at trial, which is ultimately necessary. We do know that Melanie Gibbs, who testified at the preliminary hearing and is a potential and key witness for the prosecution, is a member of the LDS Church. So perhaps this letter was more meant for her. Perhaps Mr. Means should probably contact somebody before you go writing a public letter and offending people. Because who knows, if the witnesses don't show up and testify, Mr. Means, the prosecution may not be able to prove their case. Now, the next things that Mr. Means needs to remember is that he may not want a bunch of LDS members as potential jurors on his client's jury panel. You may ask, why? Wouldn't everybody stick together? No. Let me tell you a story. Throughout the years, I've represented lots of clients. I don't care what background they come from, what color of skin they may have. Oftentimes, clients think that they want a panel made up of people of their own ethnicity or race. My experience is that is the thing furthest from the truth. For example, I had a young black client years ago. He was adamant that he wanted a black jury panel. Now, obviously, you don't get to have an all-black jury panel on your jury trial. It's randomly selected, and you just never know who exactly will be not only your potential jurors, but who will ultimately wind up to be your final 12 jurors who deliberate. Well, needless to say, this young black man got what he was hoping for, and we had, I believe it was between 4 to 6 black members on the jury, and they found him guilty. And I spoke with them afterwards because I thought that I should at least ask for my client what they thought of him. And what I was told was, he makes everyone in our community look bad. We work hard, we go to work, and he's out there doing a bunch of hooligan type of stuff. He makes the entire race look bad. That was pretty shocking to me, but I found out over the years that they're often more harsh on their own race and their own nationality because they believe that they're making the rest of their race and nationality look bad. Same thing that Mr. Means may want to figure out when it comes to his jury pool. He may not want LDS members on this panel because both Ms. Vallow as well as Mr. Daybell may not be exactly what the church is teaching and makes everyone look bad. Now, in other Lori Vallow news, take a look at this video that I came across the other night with an interview by the East Idaho News and Melanie Gibb. Now, you have to remember, I got in a bunch of heat the other day because I said it looked like Melanie Gibb was giving interviews to the press for her 15 minutes of fame. Now, I think Chad Daybell's attorney, Mr. Pryor, did a pretty good job in cross-examining Ms. Gibb, and she came across very defensive to him when she really had no reason to be. And if you go back and listen to my commentary after and during her testimony, you will see that she was a terrible witness on cross-examination. And not terrible for the defense, she was good because she looked like she was hiding something. Well, look at this interview. This is a witness who has testified in a solemn legal proceeding, and the anchor is asking her, how was it feeling to be up there in that stand? And she's like, oh, felt really great. Felt really great to get out there and testify. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. What are we, interviewing a driver in a NASCAR race? Oh my gosh.
Melanie, just your overall thoughts about testifying here now that the cases are getting going.
Yeah. Thank you. It was quite the experience, as you can imagine, a lot of mixed emotions, but overall I'm grateful to be able to share the information and knowledge that I have. There was some moments that were a little, it's hard to talk about those things and knowing the whole world's watching you, but I was grateful to be able to share it. I had been wondering for a long time since I knew I was going to take the stand someday, what it was going to be like.
I cannot believe that somebody from the prosecution has not told Melanie Gibb to not give any more interviews. You're only hurting your credibility, which is hurting the case against the prosecution. So, a little legal advice for both sides in this particular case. Now, and in other news, the arraignment for Chad DeBell is set for next week, August 21st at 9 a.m. The local news channel out there has filed a motion to broadcast it, and the court denied their motion. Why? Because it's going to be streamed over the internet for the safety of all, i.e. it's going to be on Zoom. We will be bringing it to you, and we will be seeing if there's any breaking news or whether they set it for trial. We'll be there watching. Now, I want to talk about our criminal background search. I have had more people contact me saying, thank you, I signed up for this. I was even a little bit skeptical, but I signed up for it, and it saved me from getting involved with the wrong person. Please, if you're going to be involved with someone, I don't care if it's business, a personal relationship, you meet them on the internet, please find out who you are meeting. Go to crimetalksearch.com and you can sign up for a background subscription service. And when you do that, you can search as many names as you want. You can do it anonymously, which means no one is going to know you're doing it. And literally millions of public records are searched in a matter of minutes, and a report is generated, which will give you social media information, telephone information, email information, criminal history, property records, bankruptcy filings, sex offender registries. I'm telling you, this is the best decision you can make. But wait, I will actually sweeten the offer. For the next 10 people that sign up for a background subscription service and send me proof, a screenshot that they did it, send it to scott@scottreich.com. I will send them a Crime Talk mug at no expense to them. The next 10 individuals. Go to crimetalksearch.com. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, a senseless case in North Carolina. Now, this case happened last week, and it seems to be just finally getting some traction. But I'm telling you, this is one of the most senseless things I have seen in a long time, and it's going to make your blood boil. That's right. A North Carolina man is in custody and facing first-degree murder charges after fatally shooting a 5-year-old boy. That's right. The young boy is named Cannon Hinnant, and he was shot in the head at point-blank range in Wilson, North Carolina. But get this. The person who did it was a neighbor and had actually had dinner with the father and the family the night before. According to police reports, the police responded to a shooting about 5:30 p.m. on Sunday. And when the police arrived on the scene, they found Hinnant suffering from a gunshot wound. Emergency medical personnel tried to save young Cannon's life before he was taken to a nearby medical center, but he didn't survive. After the shooting, a manhunt began for a suspect whom police identified later that night as 25-year-old Darius Sessoms. The search for Sessoms continued until Monday when police officers said that Wilson Police Department and the United States Marshals Service found him and he has been taken into custody. There is no apparent motive whatsoever for this shooting. According to family members, 5-year-old Cannon was outside playing with his siblings at the time of the shooting. And apparently, the whole family knew Sessoms and that they had lived in the area for many years. Apparently, Cannon was literally outside playing. Sessoms walked up with a gun, put a gun point blank to his head, and shot him. No reason. A 5-year-old outside playing with their family and friends. Unbelievable. This case is so senseless. I simply am shocked. Even as somebody that has seen lots and lots of cases like this, represented people who have been in similar situations like this, I will never get this. This is a 5-year-old kid. I hope that the maximum penalty can be brought down on Mr. Sessoms in this particular case. We'll give him the presumption of innocence, but ladies and gentlemen, this is not a whodunit. This should be an easy tap in putt for the prosecutors in this particular case. Next on the docket, the United States attorney tells Ghislaine Maxwell to get over it. It's for your own safety. As you may recall, earlier in the week, we brought you the story about Ghislaine Maxwell through her attorneys filing motions saying that she is not being treated fairly because she has been in isolation and she is being guarded more than any other witness normally would be, or a defendant, I'm sorry. And she wants to be out in general population with everyone else. Well, the United States attorney basically said, it's for your own safety. We don't want you to be killed. We don't want anything bad to happen to you because we want to prosecute you, send you to prison, and then we'll let bad things happen to you. So, Ghislaine, get over it. Next on the docket, yet again, another body cam video has been released. Now, this video's pretty long, so we're going to upload it separately. But as you can see from this little preview, what it shows is the large number of people gathering on the street, and you'll hear people asking, including a paramedic or firefighter that's asking if the person, Mr. Floyd, has a pulse. We'll warn you, it's a little graphic, but you've seen it before, and guess what? It's the truth. All these angles need to be released. It needs to be out there for the public to decide so everyone can make the right decision about what took place in this particular case. These four officers, they're given the presumption of innocence. It's the prosecutor's burden to prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt. And the public has a right to know. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And we really don't go looking for this, ladies and gentlemen, but man, they always seem to come from Florida. I'm not sure what is in the water. Not trying to offend our friends in Florida at all. I love Florida. I don't know what's going on down there. Well, our dumb criminal contestant of the day was a homeless man in St. Petersburg, Florida. He was arrested after he was discovered using a luxury suite at Al Lang Stadium in Tampa Bay. Apparently, a cleaning crew reportedly realized something was amiss when they discovered razors, blankets, and shaving cream containers in the suite. A subsequent review of the surveillance video revealed that Daniel Albert Neha, 39, entered the food and merchandise store of the stadium, which is primarily used by the Tampa Bay Rowdies of the USL Championship League. Footage reportedly showed that Neha had been in the facility since July 26. Police believe that he may have entered somewhat blending in with the cleaning crew. He went so long without being detected because the stadium is receiving limited use, given the fact that most stadiums are closed or limited use because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Not only was Mr. Neha charged with burglary and resisting arrest, he's also charged with theft because apparently he may have taken about $1,000 worth of clothing from the stores and consumed about $250 worth of adult beverages. Now, Mr. Neha, good initiative, poor judgment. And I understand why the police had to be called, but they could have said what they say in the bar industry, I don't care where you go, but you can't stay here. But the police were called, and now Mr. Neha is facing additional charges. But don't worry, Mr. Neha, if you are convicted, you once again will get some more free room and board, courtesy of the people of the great state of Florida. Well, Mr. Neha, guess what? You are our dumb criminal contestant for the day. Now let's do a quick recap of our dumb criminal contestants for the week so that you all can play along at home. Leave your vote below. Yesterday, we had Miss Paris, who thought it would be a good idea to extend a towel from the hatchback of her car so that she could pull her kids on the bike. Her kid apparently didn't think it was such a good idea. He was so upset, he said, I want to prosecute my mother. Our next contestant was Mr. Burke, who was driving his lawnmower intoxicated on the highway. We talked about him making some fatal admissions in that particular case that he's probably had too much to drink. For those of you who got confused, I did not say refuse the test. I said refuse the voluntary roadside maneuvers and never admit that you have in fact been drinking. You have to take the test or you will suffer more serious consequences for a refusal. Remember that. Then who can forget James McNichols, the man who stole water, beef jerky, and then returns to the scene of the crime, gets arrested, and has heroin on his person. Last but not least was a gentleman by the name of Brian Duffy, who went into the store at 7-Eleven, had an argument with the clerk about the cost of the Slurpee, and basically backhanded the drink onto the clerk, leaves, comes back the following day to get another Slurpee, where the police are called, and he is arrested for felony charges related to his slapping of the Slurpee on the store clerk. The last two individuals return to the scene of the crime, don't want to do that. And in Mr. Duffy's case, he said, yes, I was here yesterday, but I remember the conversation with the clerk, but I didn't flick anything. But of course, he lied and it was on video. Now, leave us your dumb criminal contestant of the week. This is a tough one. I don't think we have any clear breakthrough winners this week. Some weeks, it's so obvious. Let me know what you think below. I want to thank everyone for watching us today. We greatly appreciate it. Have a great day, wonderful weekend, and don't forget to go and watch the George Floyd video. Have a great day.